Hi everyone, Kimberly Houghton here, and up for another podcast of The Real Expat Wives of Arabia. And before I have my very first guest on this show, which I'm super excited about, I'm gonna just kind of backdrop a little story. So, true story, funny story. When we first landed here, my husband was actually already here prior to me and the girls flying here. And we did not know what we were getting into, did not know what to expect. And we flew into the Dammam airport, and there's this huge long line of processing when you first come into the country as a first time foreign visiting guest. And there's, you know, lots of men, it's very male dominated, not a lot of women just traveling on their own, especially back then in 2014. Things have definitely changed since then. So me and the girls are, you know, we've come off this really long international flight. I mean, I think it's definitely around the 24 hour mark when it comes to flying from here back to where we're located stateside. We had a 6-hour layover there in Amsterdam. So anyways, we get to the airport, we collect our bags, which was numerous, and our dog who's in the crate, and we were so nervous about, of course, her, getting her, making sure she was in one piece. Gratefully and thankfully, she was fine. She was very, very thirsty, but we were just like, okay, our bags made it, our dog made it, we made it. And it's like 2 a.m, some crazy like hour. We don't know what time it is at this point. We're so turned around jet lag wise. And you get like flung shot forward into the future when you fly east. So we're walking out to the airport, you know, and then like it's different because you have to, again, you have to go through the passport, the immigration, they have to fingerprint you. And then they're like in the States where you get your luggage, that's where your family can kind of come in and like pick you up and see you if they choose to. So here it's not like that. You have to get your luggage and then head out to the airport. And so that's where all the people gather, is with like these doors open and you're like trying to lug all your stuff. And there's all these people like crowding in because that's where people can actually see you come out. And so there's tons of people waiting, guys wanting to know if you need a taxi, or there's people holding up signs with like family names on it, I guess if they've prearranged for a driver. And so that's where we are expecting to see my husband to like come and get us. And I didn't even know like what was happening. I think I brought like a little scarf for like around my neck. I made sure I had like long sleeves on and pants. I didn't have an abaya. I didn't know where to buy one in the US. So we land and we're looking for my husband, and up comes this Saudi man, you know, with the traditional thob, which is like the male abaya. It's like a white dress. And he had like the prayer beads in his hand, and the headdress is called a gutra. It's the traditional Saudi headdress. And he's like coming up to me like in my peripheral vision in the corner of my eye. And I thought he was gonna like come up to me and say something about, I don't know, my head not being covered or something crazy like that. And he's like, excuse me, ma'am. And like I turn around and almost like went to like punch him. And it was my husband dressed up and what he thought was going to be, I guess, in the spirit of Arabia, welcoming us to the land. And I literally lost my marbles and started to like cry and laugh at the same time. So I love that story. I'll never, ever forget that. And it was just so funny. I don't know why he did that, but that's my husband for you. So anyways, we're about to have on my very first guest. Drum roll, please. Her name is Norma Chaplin. She has since left Arabia. She's back stateside now, but she was here. I'll let her tell the story, gosh dog it. But she left here, I think, in 2020. So she is all business, this woman. She is a top seller, MVP in her networking marketing company. She is laser focused, and it all actually ties back to her time here in the Middle East, so I can't wait to hear all about it. Stay tuned. Norma?
Hey!
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Oh, wonderful. This is my first time doing this over, like, phone, so this is going to be awesome.
Okay. I'm glad you can't see me.
You know, that's what every, like, I've invited, you know, people mm-hmm. to come, and they're like, I just don't look that great right now because whatever. And I'm like, you know, it's audible, right? Like, it's only audible. No one's going to see you.
Oh, but see, I had no idea. So I knew I was scheduled today because I looked at my appointments. I was like, and then I told the kids I had to take them to school. I'm like, come on, guys, you got to go. I got to shower and look. I don't know what this is all about. So I can't look like, you know, my regular
me. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I should have, like, made that clear. But
no, it's fine. It's fine. I actually needed to shower today.
Oh, I love it. So I did, like, a really quick intro of, like, you as my first guest.
Okay,
but
sure.
I'm going to let you make a short intro before I jump into the questions of what we're going to talk about.
Okay. Well, I'm going on 55 today. I am here in Texas. My name is Norma Chaplin. I guess we should start off with that first, huh?
There you go.
You can see I don't do too many of these as well. Okay, so let's just start over here. My name is Norma Chaplin. I'm married and a mom of two young boys here still in the house with me, and my daughter who's getting married in July. Just, perfect. You know, loving life every day, thankful that I have another day to experience life. And I can just tell you that really my life turned completely changed since I lived in Saudi.
I love it. That was perfect. And it makes my heart so happy. So let's just talk about, first of all, who were you before you moved to Arabia? So, like, who was Norma? Like, what was Norma? What did she do? Who was she?
Pre-Arabia. Pre-Arabia. I was still a mom. But I was working, but not really doing anything of my own. My husband was traveling. He was actually in Arabia at that time. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was traveling in and out. So, you know, it's hard when one of the, when your spouse or, you know, parent of your children is traveling, because, you know, there's that, you know, there's that bond that kind of goes away. You're there and you're just fixated on that person when they're in town, but when they go away, you have your routine. You have to have that set routine mm-hmm. to keep on with your day-to-day life, especially with the kids. And so I was very into a routine. Like, I was very, very rigid. Like, nothing could get out of sorts with me, or I'd go in a tantrum because my right. would just be ruined. And I found myself at times, seriously, you know, you got to get in that routine with these kids, or my gosh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Especially when you're the mom and the dad for both of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I had two boys at home, and pre-Arabia, I fought tooth and nail not to go, to be honest with you. I'm not a person that would just accept change. You know, I didn't mm-hmm. like wasn't one of those go with the flow type people. I wanted
wow.
to move my way.
Wow.
I didn't necessarily want to travel across the world and see the world. I didn't know at that time what my opportunity was.
Right.
And I was okay in my little neighborhood, even though I didn't have a whole lot of friends or anything. I was okay
sure.
in my little world inside the
mm-hmm.
house.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had a very good, I'd already traveled quite a bit, or what I thought was traveling. And I'd already experienced having my own business and stuff. And at the time, I just didn't have to work. And,
right.
and I was okay with that. But something was missing. I was mm-hmm. I was doing things, and I was pretending to be happy, if that's what it comes down to. I think I was pretending to be happy for my kids. And
right.
I really wasn't. I just was not happy at all.
Right.
age was also a big play. Just, you know, I'm going on 55 today. And at the time I was moving to Saudi, I felt like I was having to give up my whole entire world of where I was.
You kind of had to. You kind of did.
Yeah. Yeah. And people didn't want me to go. And like I said, I fought it tooth and nail. And my excuse at the time was that my daughter was a sophomore in high school, and she was the captain of the ROTC. She was in on the dance team. She was in accelerated classes. She was in the top of everything. And I didn't feel like pulling her out of everything she had going on to move her across the world to put her in a boarding school. And, you know, I just didn't want to do that to her. So that was my excuse. And it was a valid excuse. We didn't want to do that. And so
I stayed behind. Huge. Yeah. Right. And I remember because, you know, Scott and Dave would mention like, yeah, you know, Scott, his wife's still, you know, stateside because like the oldest is in high school still. And, you know, the two boys that were younger, I guess you guys tried like some kind of like dip your toes in, like you kind of, you took like a trip or two just to kind of like, well, come here and visit, or like on their break, like their break stateside. I think you guys came like spring break.
Right. Right.
When it was just for you to like, and so we finally got to like meet the boys real quick. And then I'm not sure how long after that you actually moved here. I guess that summer, maybe when.
Yeah, it was an opportunity that just came about. It was really weird how it came about, and I don't know how we got the boys out of school for a month, to be honest, because, well, they were in elementary school, that's why, because it, you know, once you get to intermediate school and high school, you just can't Texas, take the kids out of the state, you
Texas
know,
don't state. Be playing, they'd be sending the right. You get the letter in the mail from the police station, they are not playing.
Exactly. So we did come on their spring break. We decided, okay, let's go see what this is all about. My daughter was going to be graduating and going to A&M in the fall. And so we came. We flew to Saudi. And at the time, and we got there and like we had to spend 6 hours trying to get processed through because it was back when like everything was handwritten and hand documented. And my boys were like, look, and they were starving, you know, it's a long flight over. Oh, God. And we had no clue. Everybody's just looking at us, you know, we felt so out of place. And Scott's just reassuring us, you know, you're fine. Right, because, right, you know, you just don't know.
You have no clue.
I know. All you know is what you hear in the negative stuff that you hear on the news. You have no clue. But we, you know, we finally got to camp and trying to figure out everything. I was like, oh, wow, this is like a little normal neighborhood, you know, like back at home.
Yeah, so, it's wild.
Yeah, so those 4 weeks that we were there, I think it was spring break at that time for the camp. And so a lot of people were not there and we couldn't like go to another country or anything because my paperwork or us being new, we didn't have like our GAMA or like our identification to leave the country and come back in, you know, with Bahrain being only a couple hours away. But, you know, Scott at that time really hadn't even experienced, even though he had been there a couple of years, he hadn't even experienced that many times off the camp.
Right.
But, and I was deathly afraid to get off camp. I'm not good at, back then, I was not good at meeting people or wanting to socialize. And, you know, I was like,
wow, that finally, is like so hard for me to like, like, I just can't believe all these things you were dealing with internally. Like, I just didn't see that at all or experience that with you at all. It's so crazy.
I think looking back, I think I was severely depressed, but not in the crying your eyes out in a dark, you know, sitting in a ball in the corner. It was a different type of depression. And I just didn't realize it until I got there, how sad I was inside, even though I was portraying to the world that, yeah, I'm this happy wife, I'm this happy mom, I'm this
going through the motions, though.
And walking that beach path. I mean, I really think, you know, God just is there for you to put you in the place and time that you are needed. And it was, no matter how much I fought, it was his plans for me to be there. And,
wow,
you know, walking that beach path next to the ocean was therapy. It was therapy every day. And mm-hmm. I didn't care about the hot heat. I didn't care about the humidity. I didn't care how long the walk was. That was my therapy every single day. And I had to do it. I made myself.
I know. Yes, you did, and girl. You was walking that path. You can see Norma walking that path. All kind. She'd walk all over this damn camp. She'd be here. She'd be there. No, uh-huh. I'll walk. I'll walk. I'll walk. It's fine. Yeah. I'll walk.
I mean, for the longest time, Scott wanted to get me a car for the camp. And I'm like, why? It's just like 10 minutes away by walking. He's like, you're crazy. You're crazy.
Especially for someone who didn't like originate, like a lot of these European countries, they're walkable cities. You walk everywhere. Right. And so like the American mindset, especially Texas,
you don't walk anywhere.
Everything is so far and spread out. You're in a car to go to the store. You know, in Europe, you walk to the store. You don't drive to the store. Yeah. So I'm really surprised you took on that walking mindset.
Well, I just, you know, it was something about connecting me to the water, to the sun, to the earth.
Sure. Absolutely.
You're in a different, you know, just the sun is different over there. The weather's different over there. And I didn't mind it. I didn't mind the dust. I didn't mind any of that. And of course, it was all new. So I was like in this new environment with new people, trying to learn the culture. What do you say? What do you not say? How do you dress? What do you not, you know, you don't want to offend anybody, or I didn't want to offend anybody either.
But you're
also coming to terms with trying to find out, who am I? Why am I even here? You know?
Wow. Yeah. That's wild.
And so, you know, things progress, and I'll tell you what, Kim, looking back again, it was my own inhibitions, my own mindset that didn't even let me experience everything that I could have in those first 4 weeks that I was there, because the night before we were leaving to come back to the States, to, you know, to make that decision if we wanted to come back or not, Scott took us to Rahima, and that was the first night out in Rahima. That whole entire time, I think we went to the mall one time, and I was like, no way are we ever getting on these freaking highways to go to the mall. There's no way.
Oh,
it's like
God.
A death trap.
And now you'd be like driving them like the rest of us.
Yeah. But I mean, my stomach was so upset, and I had to lay down like my kids were scared. You know, you don't drive like that over here in the States. You're crazy. So
like, what's funny to me is like, in a lot of ways, I feel like, I mean, I'm so used to it now. I drive to Cobar all the darn time, but like, I feel like their depth perception is so freaking good, because they get within inches or centimeters of your bumper and they never hit you. And I'm just like, that is so awesome. Like, how do they I guess we're taught when we drive back in the States, so much caution, like leave a car length between you and the car.
Right.
You. Or like when you're passing somebody, like, right. And so I don't know. It's just like, they're just not afraid to either get hit or hit somebody, or they just know they're not going to hit that car. And they just have like such confidence. And I'm like, that is so amazing. I don't know how they do
it. But that night before we left, Scott took us to Rahima, because I was, like I said, I didn't want to go anywhere off camp.
Oh,
and that's
Norma.
That's a closed mindset, right? And we shouldn't be that like that, because there was so much to explore. But he took us to Rahima, and we went to this chicken place. I can't even remember the name before I give them a plug. But it, you know, first of all, I'm out there with my boys. They're holding my hands, like deathly afraid to let go.
Aww.
Everybody's staring at you, you know, because you're an American. I'm not, my head's not covered or anything like that, but I'm in an abaya. We're walking around. I think it was prayer time. So everybody was kind of out and about walking. I'm just like looking around, and, you know, and then Scott's like, well, go on Women's Street and go on Men's Street. I'm like, what? There's like a whole Women's Street? What? I didn't understand what that meant.
Right,
on Men's Street. I didn't understand any of that.
Uh-huh.
And so he asked me to meet him someplace. I was like, no, I'm not going to go there by myself. You know, I was, again, afraid.
Sure.
And anyway, we get to this restaurant because we're super hungry. And it's just this little hole in the wall place. and I have pictures of all this on my Instagram. And I walk in, Scott wasn't there yet. And I walk in, actually I was by myself because the boys had gone with Scott and he said, come meet me on the street. And I just found this little place that smelled good. Like I saw some chicken being made. I was like, okay, let's just go in here and try this out. So I pinged in my location and I just walk in because I don't know better, right?
And you walked in. Okay. Okay.
I just walked in. And of course I didn't know that there's a male side or a female side. I had no clue.
Yeah.
I walk in and of course this man immediately comes to me and he asks me if I'm okay. And I said, yes. I said, my family's coming here. Is it okay if we eat here? And he's like, he was dumbfounded. Really, the look on his face, he was like looking at me like, are you crazy? But he didn't say no. And all inside, I remember this vividly. When I walked in, there was three people eating at three males eating at separate tables. And they were eating and the manager kind of moved his hand. And I guess that meant, and at the time I didn't know, but now that I'm thinking back, he was telling them to hurry up and eat and get out. And so Scott and the boys came. He brought us to this other little part. It wasn't that far away in the restaurant to this little sitting down area. And he goes, are you okay sitting down? I was like, yeah, sure. So he puts this little tablecloth on the ground. We're like, oh, wow, we're going to get the whole Saudi Arabia experience here.
Wow.
And, you know, so we start, he gave us a menu and we're ordering, we're starving. We order at the time what we thought were beef ribs. And we're just, you know, waiting for our food. He brings them some Pepsi and then this big bowl of rice and stuff. And he dumps in the middle. And we're like, okay, what do we do with that? You know, we didn't have any bowls or forks or anything. He's like, this dumps this big bowl of rice. And we're just like looking at him and he's looking at us. And he said, he pointed a finger. He said, hold on. So he goes next door and he comes back with bowls and some forks because he realized that we're not used to eating with our hands. This is all completely new to us. And so I scoop, you know, I think we had like two spoons between the four of us and we're scooping it stuff in the bowls and we're just eating because we're starving.
Right.
And then he brings out these kebabs that the boys wanted and these beef ribs and the beef ribs are, you know, sitting there and I tasted one and Scott was eating one and we both kind of looked at each other and,
oh my goodness,
we were like, okay, we're from Texas.
We know what beef tastes like
all the time. We know what beef ribs look like. These are not beef ribs. They're like, ended up being camel.
I was going to ask if it was camel.
But oh, we didn't know. Oh, my goodness. But you know what? It was the crazy. It was delicious. The boys ate. They had no clue. And yeah, and he took a picture of us and he was happy. And he's like, tell your friends, you know, about us. I was like, yeah, sure. Because we could get like a rotisserie chicken and this big thing of rice. I think it was like 10 dirhams or something. Not dirhams, reals.
After that, you could eat.
Yeah, and then we went shopping around and every shop offered us chocolates and they were so nice. And I was like, oh my gosh, Scott.
Right.
How could we just not go out here more often? Why am I so afraid?
Exactly. And so
at that point, I was like, okay, we're coming back here. Let's go back for the summer, pack things up, get Madison in school, and we'll be back. Because you know, my reality was that my daughter was going off to college. And as much as I thought she was going to come home every weekend to be with her mom, she certainly wasn't going to do that.
Right.
And I just had two young boys that needed their dad. And that was the beginning of our experience to moving across.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that was perfect timing. I didn't know that story about you guys going and eating in Rahima. That is so funny. Gosh. And I love, like, Norma and Scott have the best stories of like just stories in general. So
like our almost near death experience in the desert.
So like
we were such Americans.
Yeah. So you were here for, was it 4 or 5 years?
5 years.
Mm-hmm. 5 years. And then in that time, what trips did you guys do? I know you guys did Thailand.
Oh my gosh, not enough in my opinion. But we went to Nepal. I think Nepal is.
Oh yeah, Nepal. Oh, Sri Lanka, Nepal. I believe
Sri Lanka. Uh huh. Nepal, Oman.
Yep.
We went to Egypt, which that's a whole nother story. But I left my suitcase at home. I got there and I had no suitcase.
I literally can't. I cannot. Oh my god.
We did not, as much as we were able to travel, I feel like we didn't get to even experience everything that we want to. And we still have plans. And I do. I fly back to Dubai, but not, I want to go visit some, I want to go to Bali. I want to go to Qatar. There's other areas that we definitely wanted to travel to. But we also went to London and Sweden, and we went to Greece.
That was probably one of the, like, if you're like, if I had to ask you, if you had to tell a story of like, what was the craziest story of your international travel? I would say probably the passport fiasco in Greece.
Yeah, because it was like 3 days before we had to travel back into Arabia. And, you know, you have to have your documentation. You're not going anywhere. And we had to find the embassy, go apply for a passport. And that's when they were telling us that week, there happened to be like a lot of people's passports that were stolen. And so we had to apply for that, but then we had to take that to go to find the Saudi embassy to get everything done. And it was just, it was very hard to get somebody that was speaking English there to help us in the timely manner that Scott's workplace involved to help document that he is working there to allow us back in the country. It was a nightmare of a mess there for a couple of days and about what we were going to do. And yeah, that's one of many stories.
Oh my goodness. Mm.
Well, you know, I think it was just
and you were like, this made my entire day. What product was that for you? Like,
you mean at the commissary?
Yes. They finally have this, or like, what was that for you?
This funny, it's so funny how your life changes when you move across seas and you're not, because we're here in the States, you're just so spoiled. Whatever you want, you have in your hands within minutes or a slow, you know, a drive. Over there, you just have to adapt and use whatever is at the commissary to make your food. You may want to plan taco night, but when you go there, there are no tacos. So what do? You know, I mean, taco shells. And so I think for us, whenever they would have like an American soda, like root beer, like A&W or something like that, that was real, you know, like not. And so, and of course, you know, the expense of it is three times as much in cost, but it's just a little bit of home.
Oh yeah, we paying it, baby. We paying it.
So we would pay it.
Want that $10 cereal? Okay, we're gonna get that cereal. That's right.
It wasn't just that. It was Dr. Pepper. That's what it was. Dr. Pepper. Oh my gosh. That was home. Yeah. And so Abigail, too. Yeah. So we would buy, you know, that and have it a special night dinner, whatever I made for dinner and surprise the boys with it and then I would save them. And then like, if there was, you know, something special, or if I just wanted to surprise them after school, I would have it out there for them when they came home from school and, you know, and they would just, those things would just perk up the boys too, because it wasn't just me changing my whole entire life. I changed the boys. We changed the boys' whole entire life. They gave, and they're young, they're friends, the type of school they were going to, how they lived, the food, everything. Because everything changes when you move across seas.
Yeah. So if you are inclined to share in terms of a side hustle. So in my little like pre-introduction, I kind of tied into how you're kind of like an MVP in your company world and how it kind of all ties back to the Middle East. So if you're able to share a little bit about like that whole adventure.
Sure. I'd be glad to. You know, like I said, I was feeling something that I didn't even realize I was. I tie it back to being somewhat depressed. And I was getting better, but still something was just not right. And just being in my 50s, I was dealing with menopause issues as well. And I could not get back to the States to go back and get like proper medicine or whatever. So I needed something when our friend Osa introduced me to the ketones. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, that's when really my whole world changed. Not just by utilizing this product that helped me feel so much better, calmer. I remember drinking it for a couple of weeks when Mason came to me and he's like, "Mom, whatever it is that you're doing, just keep mm-hmm. doing it. I just want to let you know, I love that you are smiling and laughing with us again." Wow. I said, "Oh, I've always been doing that." He's like, "No, you've been yelling at us."
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, we don't want to ask you to cook dinner. Because at that time, I wasn't even cooking dinner. Scott was doing that. And again, it was like a depression that I didn't even realize.
Right.
And he goes, "I just want to see you smile because when you're so much fun when you're laughing." And that tore me up. It tore me up that my young son was saying that to me.
We like fun, Norma. We like fun. Yeah. We love fun, Norma.
And so I was like, you know, there might be something to this product then. For the longest time, I didn't want to say that it was the product, but it was. And my whole family started drinking it. And at that time, I was like, okay, well, you know, I don't want to pay for my whole family to drink this because, you know, but it's really good. What can I do about this? And that's when I found out I could start, you know, a little business with it. So I did. And I didn't want to necessarily, sell to the people in camp because, you know, I was limited to people. And that's when I really, really learned about Arabia because right. I took it outside of camp. Right. I flew to Jeddah right. several times. I made right. friends. I made a lot of friends on Instagram. I have a lot of followers who follow me and it was all from Instagram.
Right.
And we brought it to the kingdom. We brought it to so many people and that's how I started my side hustle. And the company is all about educating people. It's not about just necessarily drinking the product. The product is a catalyst to better. And that's what we promote, being 1% better every single day through the use of the pure therapeutic ketones. Mm-hmm. And even after that, you know, we're always educating, you know, what can you do to better yourself than the day before? And, you know, that's what I go around doing, not only there, but actually all over the world because I'm a global ketone supplier. But, you know, we educate people on how to get started, how to just choose different foods that, you know, can help you, you know, with calories and fat and stuff like that. You know, how to choose better foods for yourself, like canned food. I mean, not canned food.
Frozen
food over canned food, mm-hmm. right? Fresh sure. foods are always going to be the best, things like that. But then just this, our newest program is just, it's called the Core 4 Challenge, where you're just committed to doing 4 things a week. And that's moving 4 times a week. Maybe it's just walking in place, going on a 10-minute walk, but do something 4 times a week, any day, you know, pick your days. Eat well 4 times a week. Because I think in our minds or a lot right. of people, you know, when they hear the word diet, they feel like they can only eat a certain amount of things or certain portions, or they have to be super strict every single day. And that's where sometimes people fail because they are too hard on themselves. And sometimes it's just hard to stick on a diet, you know, eating the same things or being restricted. And I know it is for me because I like to eat food. So I do, and I don't want people to tell me I can't have that when I want it, because then I want it even more.
I'm the same way. I love me some food.
So with this Core 4 Challenge, you just move 4 times a week, eat correctly 4 days of the week. You drink your ketones, and then you just share it with somebody 4 times a week, and it's made a huge difference in our business. We just finished up a contest for the month of January for the participants that actually entered the Core 4 Challenge. And everybody wins something, a cup, a shaker cup or a journal or something. But there was several top winners. And there was 2 $10,000 winners, 2 $5,000 winners, and 2 $2,500 winners. And I got to meet the male that won the $10,000. Wow. And his story was incredible. And it wasn't the winners weren't necessarily people that lost a lot of weight. So they were it was about their journey during those 28 days of doing that and how their mindset changed, how doing the simplest steps really helped them move forward. And one of them was a guy that I can't remember what country he's from, but he just did it because he wanted to feel better. And he said after drinking the ketones and after just eating right 4 days a week, he didn't feel so sleepy, or he didn't feel the crashes like when you're eating a lot of junk food and you go, you know, your insulin spikes up and down and have those crashes and stuff. And he was just talking about how he was just a better person to his wife and to his kids. And that's what our company is all about, you know, inspiring yeah. people to be better, 1% better every day. And that's, that aligns a lot with what I felt after moving across seas and where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. And that's just yeah. to inspire people to feel better, be better.
So from going through the motion, robotic,
right,
you know, putting on the mask, avoiding the inner self, mm-hmm. landing in a place where you had reflection, time to reflect. You weren't pressured to be here, to be there. You just like had to go in order to get through it. Go. Mm-hmm. And I always say, like, you have to go inward to get, like, you have to go in to get through. So, mm-hmm. you have like all this self-reflection and you turn 180 around to helping other people become, you know, who they're destined to be and better. I love that. I love it. I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love it so much. And if anyone wants to, I'm going to put into the notes, like your website and like how to reach you through your TikTok and Instagram, if anyone wants to follow for more information for sure about that. But I also want to talk a little bit about how, so I swear it's the Twilight Zone because of COVID, right? So COVID, I left and then you guys were gearing up to leave and then like COVID hit. And so like you're mm-hmm. mid COVID and you're trying to exit, mm-hmm. You know, if any of the listeners or my one listener that's listening, that when you hit 60, you can't work any longer as an expat, or I don't even think Saudis can. It's like 60 is like a forced retirement age. So mm-hmm. in order to exit Saudi Arabia, there's a lot of things that have to happen, a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of details that go into it. And then on mm-hmm. top of that, COVID was here. And so mm-hmm. how was that for you guys trying to get, I mean, I'm stuck out at the time. I'm already out.
I know.
I'm so yeah. far removed from anything that's going on over here. Like, the trauma and the stuff that you guys were going through, I'm going yeah. through in the U.S. And so, but I'm also working and I'm just right. like with COVID patients, but like,
you know,
it was just wild for me. And I know you were moving out, trying to exit at that time mm-hmm. and you were like stuck and you couldn't leave. Right. I was just like, what is happening?
It was a little bit of a crazy time, but I have to say that in the end, that was probably the best way for us to go. So we wouldn't be like, we did, you know, have a lot of times when people leave, the expats leave, we have the Masalama parties. I don't think, Kim, that I could have gone through those. Y'all would have had to drag me, made me leave Arabia because I did not want to go. I did right. not want to go.
Right.
And I think I couldn't have, you know, I didn't want to see people crying. I didn't want to cry. I didn't want to feel those emotions. I just wanted to leave and know that if I wanted to come back, that I could come back. Mm-hmm. So it's like I feel like I'm on a vacation away from there. Mm. So in that respect, I'm kind of glad we left that the way that we did. But
right.
yeah, Scott finished working. His contract was up March 30th, and we did get permission to stay so that the kids could finish school. So we had that permission done in February, and of course, at that time, you know, COVID wasn't really that deep yet. But in March, at the end of March or the middle of March is when everything started, right. we started going in lockdown and stuff yep. like that. And we're like, okay, well, we were fine. We had planned, you know, we didn't, you know what was going to happen. I mean, Madison's was had graduation, you know, we were planning on going home for that. And all these things that we had planned, but of course, none of that happened. But so we, March, April, May, June, Scott had lined up other contracts and stuff, but everything kept falling through
because of COVID.
Right.
So like, okay, well, we're going home. And but yeah, we couldn't even get home. We couldn't even get an airplane to take us out.
Oh my God.
Finally, you know, we were just going day to day, but it was getting very monotonous because you couldn't travel anywhere in Saudi. You couldn't go anywhere. The lockdowns were happening, you know, everything was getting very real. And, you know, we had to figure out a plan. And what made it really hard for us and why we stayed like an extra month was because of the pets that we had. We weren't going to leave PETA and Chance behind and Chance that we would get them later. They were coming home with us. And, you know, at that time, even in the States, planes weren't flying with animals, you know, and we had the hardest time trying to get, you know, our animals out. And,
oh my God.
So we finally got a mover to pack our stuff, what we were bringing back. We got that done. We were down to the bare minimum in the house of what we needed. Even Shibu, oh my gosh, I need to write him. He was such, just miss him to death.
We need a whole podcast with just Shibu.
We should.
We really do.
He helped us out. You know, we were at the end, we were just giving stuff away because, you know, we weren't going to take it and, you know, we weren't going to just sell everything. We just wanted people to have whatever they needed. And, at the time, I think we even left our washer and dryer. We have no idea who got our washer and dryer, whatever seat. I mean, just stuff that we had left behind because we couldn't pack, you know, Nobody was buying anything just because half the people were gone from camp as well, you know, because mm-hmm. they were stuck in another, like you were stuck at home, couldn't get in. But finally we got, I think it was the once a month flight from the States that mm-hmm. brought a plane in that we could catch. And we had to travel to Riyadh. You know, it was always something or another going on. And at that time it had to do with the animals. And like either, you know, if one thing wasn't correct on their paperwork, they couldn't go. So something had happened on one of their paperwork. So we had to go find an open clinic to get a veterinarian to sign off that, you know, I can't remember if it was the cat or the dog, that they were okay or whatever.
So you didn't bring a pet in. You're trying to exit. So it's so funny because on my Facebook page, a memory pops up and it's like, note to self, or like FYI. This is me typing this on my Facebook memory. It's like mm-hmm. FYI, when traveling or moving overseas with a pet may cause an ulcer. So yeah. I remember trying to get getting my dog squared away to come with us was the most stressful part of us coming mm-hmm. here. So I can't mm-hmm. imagine the other way around.
Yes.
When it's like, there's, you know what I'm saying? And on top of that, it's COVID.
Yes. And the requirements that they had, and then the containers had to be a certain, you know, it's not like you can just go find a pet carrier anywhere yeah. in Arabia, right? You're yeah. very limited. And yeah. so, and then they had to have a special size and
mm-hmm. yep.
oh my gosh, yep. it was such a pain. And then my, you know, poor Champs, he's a rescue dog and he's already traumatized from his previous life.
Right.
And going through all this was, oh, I just felt so bad for him, but it
anyways,
was, we just, got through it. And while yeah. we got, and you know what, the money that we paid, and we paid a crap load of money to get out, it only brought us as far to Washington.
That's right. I remember you guys had yeah. to land, like just get there, like touch yeah. U.S. soil and yeah. then like figure it out.
Yeah. And we found one airlines while we were there because we couldn't even book anything in advance. We had found one airlines while we were in Washington that would take the cat and the dog, not in cargo, but underneath the seat. And so they were asking us, we kind of fudged a little bit about Champs's size. And I found like some kind of big purse that I was able to buy. We found it and we took, you know, some clothes out of some other duffel bag that we had. And we stuffed Champs in this duffel bag.
You're like, get in there, Champs.
With his little nose hanging out just to breathe. And we're like, oh okay, if we just go 4 more hours home,
oh, then we'll,
you know, have made it. And the cat had already been traveling. And my worst fear with the cat was, you know, pooping in another duffel bag. And I just knew for a fact that Mason was going to open it up and the cat was going to jump out and go all over everybody's seats and stuff. And oh my God, I was just a nervous wreck, but we were able to get home and we were just excited. And I remember Madison picked us up, and during those 3 months, Matthew grew. Like little Matthew was not little Matthew anymore.
Right.
And Madison came, and we were getting, you know, Mason went to go get our luggage, and Madison's like, "Mom, like, did y'all bring an extra kid home? Who is that?" She did not even recognize her brother. Wow. That's how much Matthew had changed.
They do and have that.
I was like, "It's Matthew."
Yeah, like seventh and eighth grade. It's like, it's crazy. They literally go from like somewhat of an adult, like a mini adult, to like a real adult almost. And you're just like, what is happening?
Yeah. Matthew's like 6 foot now, and he was towering over me at that time, and his voice had changed. It was very deep. And you know, nobody had haircuts because you couldn't get a haircut at that time, because all the salons were closed. We all looked very haggard. We did not look like ourselves, and then tired, we're tired. She did not recognize Matthew.
Oh goodness.
And we even lost some luggage on the way home too. There was one whole suitcase of mine.
Of course. What's it?
You know, we didn't even realize we had lost it because all our luggage was black. We put everything in the car. It was a week later when I went to go find something for a customer, some ketones. I was like, oh my gosh, that suitcase didn't make it. It was a suitcase that had 35 boxes of ketones.
Oh,
I lost
no.
it. And my special Cutco knife and my two Nike tennis shoes and a lot of stuff. I'd lost a lot of things.
Oh, I
suitcase,
can feel that pain. I feel that pain.
Oh, it was.
I feel it. Ooh, that's to the heart there.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. But gosh, my experiences over there, when I found my business is when I really involved myself with the community outside our camp and got to know the Saudis and any expat that was over there, not just the Saudis, but anybody. For whatever reason, I was drawn to them, to their culture, to eating, the different foods, just everything. It was just fascinated me and traveling and stuff as well. And it just opened up my eyes and realized, one, how very spoiled we are over here. And it made me appreciate everything that we have over here as well. And same with my kids.
Yeah.
You know, they appreciate America much more.
It's beautiful.
And know that we have everything that we could ever want over here, and that the majority of people across the world don't. They don't have that. And, you know, things are changing, of course, for people all over the world. But I enjoy every single experience, every single day that I lived across seas.
Yeah.
And I promote that a lot to the young people over here. I was like, if you ever have a chance to move across the world, do it.
I was going to say, what would you tell somebody if they're thinking about it, or like, you know, if you want to have advice, what would it be if you're for others that are actually, well, let me say, if you had something advice wise to say to somebody, right, about to move over here or someone that's actually still here, what would you say to them?
For somebody that's just moving over there, I would just say, keep an open mind to the different culture, the things that you're going to experience. Don't say no. Don't be closed off. Just immerse yourself in the opportunities that are available to you and learn from it and share that, because it doesn't matter where you are in the world, because since my traveling, you're still a mom, you're still a wife, kids are kids, they all go through the same thing. It doesn't matter where you are. Kids are kids, and the parents are still trying to support their kids, put food on the table, have a loving life. It's the same stresses. It doesn't matter what culture you're in. And so just be open to learning different things. And for the people that are there, again, don't limit yourself to what's inside camp. Go and experience what nobody else in the entire world gets to experience, because you get to be there.
Right.
And immerse yourself into the culture. There's so many beautiful parts to that country, to Saudi, that nobody ever visits or experiences and gets to experience. And the people are just so nice. They welcome you with open arms. They will give you, you know, they'll go hungry and feed you before they feed themselves. That's how nice they are. Yeah. And I didn't realize that. And it's in the beginning because I was just too scared to put myself out there and to want to experience things. I was very closed-minded, and I'm certainly not that way anymore. My whole life has changed everything. And if somebody said, hey, do you want to go to Thailand tomorrow? I'd be on the first plane. Let's go. I would. Nothing's going to hold me back now.
Yeah, man. Fear does crazy things to people. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad that you saw, you know, the other side of all that, and you're kind of like rebirthed and you're on your way like a rocket. I love watching you from afar and everything that you've got going on back stateside. And I know you're back and forth to Dubai. So when I get the ability to fart out an extra whatever to get myself over there, maybe I'll meet up with you. But yeah, I need extra time sliced out for pleasure. So like no mixing of the biz. Like I want you to be all business, and then like when I come, it's gonna be like all pleasure.
Yeah. That's the thing. I know I get in my work modes, and but yeah, Dubai that's is a lot only, of fun.
My only request.
Sure. Shoot. We just need to just go out and have a night of just some.
Well, unless you're going to pay me, and then I'll work for you. If you're going to pay me, then that's a whole nother conversation.
That's too funny. Hey, we could do it both ways for sure. You've got a lot of knowledge with you and your nursing and stuff. So
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah. The business has brought me different places now, but it all boils down to me finally letting go of my being scared and jumped on the opportunity to move over there. You know, that's what started my whole different life that I have going on now. So I couldn't fight it any longer, you know, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very thankful. Very, very thankful that Scott, you know, I don't even know how Scott even got the opportunity to go there. I think I never even asked him, but one day he just came home. He said, hey, I think I have a job in Saudi. I was like, huh?
Oh, yes, girl. We all had that conversation. Like, I'm sorry. Excuse me? Like, where? What did you just say? So have you ever done rapid fire, like trivia?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. So it's like, I'll ask you like abaya or no abaya, and you'll be like, no abaya. So I tried to make it like Arabia centered. Okay. So like for you, let me just pull a few, like, so Dammam or Bahrain airport, like which would you prefer? Okay. Yeah. Hands down Dammam. Okay. Shawarma or Hamsa?
Hamsa.
Which would you say, and this is like, they're just silly questions, marhaba or salam alaikum?
Salam alaikum.
Okay, so staring, do you directly shoot your stare right back at them, or do you avoid the stares?
No, I have direct contact.
Me too. Riyadh or Jeddah?
Jeddah. Jeddah is my favorite city.
Dubai or Oman?
Oh, that's tough. Dubai, only because I know the city. I know it very, very well. Right, Oman, Oman's beautiful too, though.
I know. For me, it's the Sufi atmosphere. It's the it's the Sufi clan, tribe, energy, like Islamic mysticism that, you know, resonates over that land. And I just cannot get enough of Oman. I wish I could find a job for Dave there. Sour cream or Lebna?
Lebna.
Lebna. Everybody, if you don't know what Lebna is, you have not lived.
Good stuff. I miss halloumi. And I know we can find it here in the stores, but I do miss having that halloumi.
And I was going to ask you if there's one thing you miss from here, it's halloumi cheese. Yeah.
I miss all the foods from over there. We just don't have that over here, or I don't know where to find it over here.
So get this. They opened up a Subway on camp. And they have, like, in their little lineup for the sandwiches, there's halloumi cheese, like a halloumi cheese choice. Uh-huh. So if you want to have halloumi cheese on your Subway sandwich, you can put, you know,
I love halloumi. Love it.
Girl, when that place opened, when I tell you it was so packed, I think.
Oh, I'm sure. Just something new, right?
They ran out of bread and cookies in like hours. It was like all gone.
It's great.
Yeah. It's like a whole nother world.
Yeah.
Truly like an alternate universe.
And you just learn. It's so funny because my kids now, if the, you know, not that we have the Wi-Fi that goes out all the time over here, but every now and then it'll go out and they're like, oh, that's fine. I mean, they got used. They learned how to tolerate things a lot better. You know, you learn that living across seas because you don't always have Wi-Fi or you don't always have things at the commissary. You just learn to adapt and
that's right,
you know, go with the flow for sure.
Adapt or perish, baby.
Exactly. You had no choice, really.
That's right.
And it taught us to live without a lot of material things as well. You know, you don't have to have material things to be happy, to be loved or wanted or whatever. And they learned that as well. They can go to any airport and just sleep on a little chair. They're fine. They're happy. They don't have to have the big comforts of a hotel. I mean, you just, again, your whole life experience just changes, or sure ours does.
That's why I started this podcast for whoever wants to listen to our craziness.
It's a fun crazy. And it may not be at the time, right? It may be very infuriating or upsetting at the time, but when you look back on it, it's nothing in the whole big scheme of things.
Exactly. It's all good. I'm just grateful for that and the lessons that I've learned and continue to learn. And you were a part of all that. So, well, we send our love to the boys and to Scott. And I just thank you for being my first guest on my podcast.
Well, thank you for asking. I appreciate it. Loved it. Love reminiscing all these stories.
I know. I've had a few people say, you know what, I just can't even talk about it because it brings back too much.
Whatever, good and bad. I just know it was life-changing for us. And I'm very grateful for it and for the people that I've met and continue to meet until we meet again.
Until we meet
in Dubai somewhere.
Let's do it. I'm down. Yeah.
Norma Shapland, ladies and gentlemen, I so thoroughly enjoyed talking with her and getting a little bit more perspective. Like you guys all learned, she was here for 5 years, and I had the privilege of becoming her friend and getting to know her, but there were still some things I still didn't know, and so now I do, and we were both better for it. Thank you for listening to the Real Expat Wives of Arabia. And until next time, hang tight, y'all.